from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in June of 2013 when New York State passed legislation to establish Startup New York. Despite the name, the Economic Development Program is not only about startup companies. It's a program designed to bring about economic development across upstate, and they're asking for 5 years of patience as the program grows. Now, immediately, the state began promoting Startup New York and set about working with partner companies. Some were indeed starting up, others were expanding. Last week, a report detailed the first-year numbers, which were small, fewer than 100 jobs created, despite millions in advertising. Some members of the legislature have called for the program to be halted. Governor Cuomo says that is way too soon. He told Capital New York, quote, "It is inarguable that in a high-tax state that has paid such a price for being a high-tax state that a tax-free zone is helpful, useful in attracting business. Even in Cuba, they're going to have a tax-free zone," he said. The governor says we can't just judge 1 year's worth of numbers and make a full decision on a program, and he thinks that this will be a program that creates thousands of jobs. So let's learn about what Startup New York does, what it's all about, maybe some of the early success stories and some of the concerns that the critics have. On the line with us is Leslie Watley, the Executive Vice President for Startup New York. Leslie, thank you for taking the time.
My pleasure.
In studio is Greg Westbrook, CEO of Clear Cove. That's a company that's just a few years old, using technology to transform the wastewater industry. They're going to do some very interesting things. And Greg, not only the CEO of Clear Cove, but a company that is an early participant in Startup New York. Thanks for taking the time to come in.
Absolutely.
Also in studio, Kent Gardner, Chief Economist with the Center for Governmental Research. Kent, nice to see you back.
Nice to see you, Evan, as always.
And on the line with us is Mike Durant, New York State Director of the National Federation of Independent Businesses. Mike, thanks for taking the time as well.
Thank you for having me.
Leslie Watley, let me start with you. Startup New York, the full acronym is what, by the way? Because if people hear startup and they think, well, startup businesses, startup companies, I think there's been some confusion there. Tell us what the acronym is and what the mission is.
Well, the Startup New York acronym is actually related to the SUNY tax-free zones, but it's broader than that. When the final legislation was passed, it was the entire state, not just upstate, and it's all universities in the state, not just SUNYs. So startup is really, we view it more like starting up the economic engine. It's not just about startup companies. It's about growing and expanding startups, existing, and attracting companies from outside the state and country as well.
And how will it work? How is it working right now? What's the setup?
The way it works is the universities around the state have to submit a plan that has vacant land and space that they are in control of, and they create tax-free areas that way. They designate their mission and the types of companies that they want to affiliate with. They submit that plan for approval, and once that's done, they're free to start talking to businesses. So when you ask me how it's going, I'm telling you, I think it's going fantastic. In just the first year of this program, we have 69 approved campus plans. Now, people need to appreciate that it takes some work to put those plans together. They need to identify the space that they want to include in the plan. They need to get approval inside the university for the types of programs and companies that they want to pursue, and then they need to get state approval for that plan. The plan right now, we're down to about 45 days to get those plans approved, the biggest piece of which is the 30-day public notice that the schools need to give. So the fact that we have 69 schools into the program just shows the buy-in and the willful support of the program by the universities itself. Now, the reason that it's important to get those universities in first is that the businesses apply to the schools. And then if the school approves doing business with that business, they then apply to ESD for approval. We have approximately 100 companies admitted to the program already in just the first year of the program. Now, granted, it takes a while to get revved up, and that's where the criticism of some of these statistics is premature, okay? You need to be in the zone for 6 months and a day in order to enjoy the income tax, right? Because 6 months and a day means you're in there for the majority of the tax year. The other thing that's happening is that the companies are ramping up. Only 30 of the 54 approved companies in 2014 actually located in a tax-free area during the year. 18 of those were in the last 4 months of the year. What do you do when you're putting together an expanding business or a new business? You have to come up with your plan. You have to get your financing. You have to carefully hire the people that you're going to bring into your company. And many of these companies are either building out buildings or fitting out space. All of that stuff takes time. And I would say to you that we've built an outstanding foundation for a program whose benefits are really going to shine in years to come.
Leslie, one of the concerns I hear from critics across the political spectrum, or even across the sort of the analysis spectrum, is that they want to know that this won't be Empire Zones 2.0. And by that I mean, you know, sometimes you look at Empire Zones, you think of Medley Center and Irondequoit, you think of these sort of big behemoths that ask for big tax breaks with big promises. We'll create 500 jobs, give us a tax break, you get the tax break, 5 years later you've created 10 jobs, there aren't a whole lot of teeth, and despite the big tax breaks, the company either walks away or nothing really happens. How do you make sure that Startup New York doesn't become Empire Zones 2.0 and not punish the companies if they fall short on their jobs promises?
Okay, we get that the Empire Zones had some issues, and there's a lot of language in this legislation that tries to prevent that type of behavior happening again. So there is a rigorous review of, A, making sure there's no competitor in the community when these companies come into the program. We make them file annual paperwork with the taxing authority on jobs produced versus jobs protected. And, oh, by the way, if they don't produce the jobs, they don't get the tax benefits, and they could ultimately have to leave the program if they've been fraudulent. So we've really tried to not make it Enterprise Zones 2.0. And, you know, the other thing is they're affiliating with universities. That didn't exist with the Empire Zone. The university affiliation is the secret sauce to this program because it's meaningful on both sides. It's also meaningful to the community that the university is usually a dominant player, maybe even the dominant employer in the community, is welcoming these companies and partnering with them.
Okay. Let's say they make a promise to create, I don't know, 100 jobs. They create 15 jobs in 5 years. Do they have to reimburse the taxpayers for any tax breaks they've gotten?
After a period of time, they are subject to clawbacks, and potentially, yes, they could be thrown out of the program too.
Let me, before I bring in Mike Durant from NFIB and Kent Gardner from the Center for Governmental Research, let me ask Greg Westbrook, who's the CEO of ClearCove. Again, that's a local company that's been around for how long now, Greg?
We've been in existence since 2013, February.
Okay, and what's the short description of what ClearCove does?
We are a renewable energy company extracting fuel from wastewater to drive a new renewable energy for the market we've chosen to serve.
Okay, and this is the kind of market that we've seen a lot of growth in recent years. How many employees right now?
Currently, we have about 8 or 9 employees full-time. We've made a commitment, and I just want to comment on Leslie's. I want to echo everything she said. Mm-hmm. This is not about the past. This is about going forward. This is about job creation. This is about leveraging the intelligence that lies within universities throughout New York. I happen to be affiliated with RIT. I'm an RIT alumni. Without RIT's partnership in this, this could never have occurred for our small company.
Okay. And so 8 or 9 full-time employees right now, but what was your job's promise? How did you end up becoming in the fold of Startup New York? What did you have to sort of sign up
to? So we started the process mid-year last year.
Okay.
And it was about a 6-month process working closely with RIT officials along with the folks from the state that allowed us to identify our growth anticipation. At the time, we did not have an order. It's kind of hard to project business when you don't have an order, a purchase order from somebody. We've been very fortunate. We've had multi-millions of dollars of friends and family's investment in our business. We are also very fortunate in the end of 2014, we did receive a purchase order, and we received our second purchase order in the first quarter of this year, and we're receiving a very large purchase order that will equal our revenue target for 2015, and that will result in an additional 6 to 7 jobs that we've obligated our company to RIT, to the state of New York, to deliver on those jobs. Those are jobs not just within inside our company, the 7 is within inside our company, but we have legal teams throughout the state, we have a construction company that works with us throughout the state, and we also drive additional jobs as relates to the installation of this renewable energy equipment into the wastewater treatment facilities.
And so just to make sure I understand, if you've got 8 employees now, you've got to get to
15 right.
Within 5 years.
Right. We have an incremental plan. They're all published. They're all publicly available. Mm-hmm. I brought it with me today just to make sure that I quote the right numbers. But it's 7 this year. It's 5 the following year for a total of incremental jobs over a 5-year period. In the case of ClearCove, is 23 incremental jobs.
Mike Durant from the National Federation of Independent Businesses, I hear you and your organization railing against high taxes all the time. So what's the beef with the program that aims to reduce taxes for certain sectors?
think you just answered the question. It aims to reduce taxes for certain sectors. We see, I think you have to take a step back and kind of look at the timeline of this program and the impact it's had and the feelings that it has elicited from small employers across the state. Up until 2013, when the Startup New York program was enacted by the legislature, we hadn't yet to see a business-centric, a solely business piece of legislation passed, you know, introduced by the governor, passed by the legislature to try to revitalize our state's economy. This was the first one. So the first thing out of the gate was the Startup New York program offering the benefits that it does for either expanding businesses or to attract new business on college campuses, as they've described already. Since then, we've now seen corporate tax reduction. We've seen some tax cuts and tax reform for big business, Wall Street, et cetera. Small employers, which are the largest collective private sector employers in this state, has not seen any positive tax reform by this administration. Yet the small business owner that's working 60, 70 hours a week, that is hiring or employing 5, 8, 10 employees, that's suffering in a state that year after year, stats from across the political spectrum, statistics come out, reports come out, and say that taxes are the largest anchor on any revitalization for New York's economy, they have not received a tax cut. So they feel that the entire program and the messaging and the television commercials, et cetera, is disingenuous. I'm not saying a program like this could not be part of a solution for the upstate, particularly economy or New York's economy as a whole. I'm saying that it was the first thing out of the gate. Big business and Wall Street have gotten tax cuts. Manufacturers have gotten tax cuts. Small employers have not. And the governor, in his budget, was promoting a historic, his words, not mine, tax cut aimed at helping small business. It would have helped 40,000 small businesses when there are hundreds of thousands of small business, and it would total $32 million. The advertising alone for Startup New York, as allocated in this recent budget, is over $50 million.
Mike,
so the messaging and the taste that's left in small employers' mouth is very, very bad.
Let me jump in just real briefly on the advertising point, because I think that this has been one of the points of criticism. When we see those first-year numbers, 76 jobs created and a total number of tax breaks and benefits totaling only about $56,000. It's not the $56,000 the critics have seized on. It's $47 million in an advertising campaign. But as I understand, Leslie Whatley, the state is saying that's not necessarily taxpayer money. That's money from surplus funds from power sales. Is that correct? That's where the ad budget comes in?
Yeah, that's true. But that's really not the point. The point is that we are trying to create a brand for New York, and that's what that spending has been on. We are trying to get beyond the image that New York rightfully deserved for decades, that it was a high-tax, high-cost place to do business. We are saying with those ads, we are changing things here. We are trying to make it friendlier for business. We are open for business. We have startup and we have other programs. When you're making a location decision, we want you to consider us. We have to get New York in people's heads. That's what advertising does. You see millions and millions of dollars spent by all kinds of different kind of industry companies to get their product in people's heads. I've been a corporate real estate professional for over 30 years. Okay, I'm a business person. I am not a politician. I came to the government because I believe in this program and I believe it will work. Let's just say 4 or 5 years ago, I was to go in and pitch my CEO on a location decision for a new product line. If New York had been one of the states I had pitched, I would have been laughed out of the room. Okay, New York, really? Now I have a state that is openly advertising, look, we're fixing things. We're making it better here. Please consider us when you're making your expansion or new location. I take to that same recommendation to the same people, to brokers, to site selection people. They take us seriously now. They're willing to look. They're willing to run the numbers. That is huge. When people contact us about the Startup New York program, if they're not right for startup, we're referring them to the incubators or to Excelsior or to the small business programs or other things offered by the state just to get them to consider New York and stay here, come here. Advertising has been phenomenal.
And Leslie, to Leslie's point there, again, we're talking to Leslie Watley, the Executive Vice President of Startup New York. She is not a politician. She's come from a career in real estate and served as Global Head of Corporate Real Estate at Morgan Stanley, J.P. Morgan Chase. So Leslie's right. I think a lot of people appreciate a little more blunt speaking. But Leslie, when you say that advertising is there to tell people New York is open for business, what I hear Mike Durant saying is you have to be open for business. You can't just say, I'm going to advertise about the great new giraffe you should see in my backyard, but if everybody shows up and there's not a giraffe there, it doesn't matter if you're advertising it. You have to be able to produce something. And Mike Durant, she's saying the advertising is designed to tell people we're different now. It is a different landscape. Is that all right with you? Mike?
Well, I would think that I get what the advertising is trying to do, but it's spinning something that's not a reality for the vast majority of small businesses, of private sector employers in the state. That's the problem. So these folks, again, in the highest tax state in the country, are looking at this status, this new program, and also, by the way, in the context of billions of dollars that New York State is spending to try to revitalize our state's economy. I'm not saying economic development programs aren't necessary. I'm saying the entire economic investment portfolio should be looked at. If we're spending billions of dollars, including Startup New York, in that context, to try to create jobs, sustain jobs, and create innovation, why don't we reduce taxes broadly, writ large, because that's the problem in the first place? And I don't think after 10 years, when the Startup New York status ends, these businesses, depending on how things happen in Albany over the next few years, are going to be faced with the highest tax business climate in the state.
I want to get Kent in here, but Leslie, go ahead and respond. I know you wanted to jump in.
Some of the points you made are fair, but you can't attack this program because it doesn't solve the world's problems. It is a program that is working on its own, and it's one of a number of things that the governor has done to try to address that problem. You know, by the way, there are a lot of things available to small business in this state, and part of it is that people just don't know about them. One of the additional programs that was just launched by the governor is a venture capital fund that's going to try to help these growth and seed companies survive. Are there future programs he puts in place for those existing businesses you're talking about? Maybe, but let's not talk about Startup New York in a critical way just because, like I said, it doesn't address everything.
Let me ask the economist in the room, Kent Gardner with the Center for Governmental Research. Is it too early to try to evaluate this program? We saw E.J. McMahon, among others, the president of the Empire Center for Public Policy, with a very blunt critique of it. But some people, again, Leslie, the governor, they're saying this is too early. If I started a business and my first year I made $5,000, you would tell me, well, if that's all you can do, then you should shut your business down. But maybe 5 years later, things are rocking. Is it too early to judge?
You know, Evan, I really think it is, and it's not fair to take a look at the first year and it's certainly the amount of money that's been spent for advertising is it's rather head snapping. It's a lot of money, but I have to side with Leslie here. I mean, I think about the Startup New York as a bit of a loss leader for New York State. You get to Black Friday, right? And Best Buy says, come to Best Buy at 5 a.m. on Black Friday, and you can buy a laptop computer for only $139.95, and we're going to throw in eight maids milking, seven swans of swimming, for free. But there will only be one per store, right? But you did get them into the store, and I think that to the extent that Startup New York, I'm not suggesting that it's a bait and switch, but nonetheless, Leslie's right. I mean, New York State has got a well-deserved reputation as being a very highly regulated and very expensive state. But I agree also with Mike that the substance needs to be there, and the governor does need to be looking at regulatory reform. I think needs to be looking at the general tax climate.
And Kent, let me get you to respond to what E.J. McMahon wrote just about the job promises. Because, again, last week people were talking about, 76 jobs in the first year with Startup New York. That's not a big number. And the governor saying, of course not. It's the first year. Let's talk in 5 years. Let's see where we are. But in 5 years, if it's 2,000 jobs, if it's 3,000 jobs, E.J. McMahon writes, over the next 5 years, the company's granted startup status in 2014 are committed to creating 2,085 jobs, not even a rounding error in a statewide economy whose 600,000 private firms employ nearly 7.6 million people. The nine out-of-state companies on the 2014 startup list have pledged to create 451 jobs based on a projected five-year investment of just $4.3 million, or less than 10% of the program's first-year ad expenditure. These are very small numbers with a state with very big problems. What do you think?
Well, I'm back to my lost leader analogy, you know, that there are only so many per store, that supplies are limited. This is a program that is pretty narrowly circumscribed. There are only certain sites within the state. You have to conform to some fairly stringent rules. And I know this, the administration is very sensitive to the issue of Empire Zone, the Empire Zone debacle. The problem with the Empire Zones was that the regulations, the way it was originally passed by the Assembly, it was very narrowly targeted at some very deeply distressed parts of the state. And yet, as the clamor arose over the years, the regulations got loosened and loosened and loosened and loosened. And, you know, what ended up being existing in the last couple of years of the program bore no resemblance to what was originally passed. And so I think that the administration is trying very hard to tie this thing up so that it can't be exploited in the same way. Unfortunately, of course, that means it also is going to be definitionally almost a small program. What's more, it's going to be a program that's going to be pretty heavily regulated. So it's going to take time. I think that's the other issue. As Leslie pointed out, it's going to take time if you've got a program that's very closely regulated and very tightly circumscribed for applications to get through and get approved.
Kent, should taxpayers still be smarting from the idea of Empire Zones, especially in light of the fact that for the last 15 years, we've heard all of these promises, hundreds of jobs will be created, and years down the line, if anybody actually tries to dig it up, it's often nowhere near the return on the investment. And it didn't ever feel like there were penalties for that. It felt like the firms would say, sorry, and nothing really happened out of that.
Yeah, the Empire Zones program was a debacle in so many ways. It was a program that was exploited almost from day one. Really unfortunate bit of economic development policy, and unfortunately, I think the administration has to recognize that there's still a lot of anger out there because of the Empire Zones program. I mean, you know, the thought that Eastview Mall should be benefiting from tax credits under Empire Zone that were originally given to the city of Geneva—it's just appalling.
If I may, go ahead, Leslie.
Yep.
A couple of points.
Yep.
On the numbers, the rate of acceleration is another thing we need to look at. We had 54 companies approved in 2014. We've already had 40-plus announced so far this year in the first quarter, and there's more to be announced very soon. So we are picking up pace and building a momentum. And as more and more companies get into this, we will build even more momentum. As more schools get in, we build momentum. I also want to go back to a point that Greg made because it's very important to the comments that you said McMahon made. He's creating jobs, but there's this thing called the multiplier effect, which hopefully Kent can back me up on. The multiplier effect comes about because Greg doesn't want to hire all these accountants, lawyers, finance people, himself. So he's going to hire those people in the community. The people that work for him make a pretty good wage. So guess what? They're going to hire personal trainers. They're going to go to restaurants. They're going to buy shoes for their kids. So there's money flowing in the community that's coming from these companies as well, not just the jobs that they're creating. They're hiring other services in the community too.
Multiplier effect, Ken? Fair?
It's absolutely fair, but I think we do need to keep it in context. It is we have to make sure that we're not being unrealistic about how big those multipliers will be. You know, clearly to the extent that we are providing tax incentives to firms that would have been established in the state anyway, that would have grown in the state anyway, and you know, setting up that kind of a wall and really being confident that you're providing incentives to firms that are not simply being given rewards for things that they would have done otherwise. It's very, very hard to do. And that's not a problem that's unique to New York. It's not unique to startup. It's common to all economic development programs. It's a game of poker. You're sitting across the table from the businessman. The businessman is saying, oh, the only way I'm going to locate this here, or the only way I'm going to employ many people at all, is if you give me this incentive. And you really don't know whether they're being honest with you or not.
Is there a concern, Kent, with picking too many winners and losers? You heard Mike Durant mention the manufacturer's franchise tax last year went to zero. We've seen targeted tax breaks for years in different sectors. As an economist, do you tend to, in generally speaking, feel like Mike is more on the right track when he says cut taxes across the board as opposed to picking winners and losers? Or do you think that making certain targeted efforts can provide a return on investment?
You know, I tend to be a bit cynical about the targeting. The targeting is not really narrow here with startup. It's a broad set of targets. I think most firms would qualify for startup. At the same time, I think realistically, I think, this is something, if you take a look at Warren Buffett's investments, Warren Buffett doesn't invest in new and cutting-edge industries. He invests in industries that are kind of old, boring industries that are going to continue to be part of our economy for a very long time. So Mike's right. A lot of the business in New York State and the business that's going to be employing probably the majority of workers in 20 years are the existing boring sectors that we have right now. Because that's really where the jobs are.
Mike, I know we've got to let Mike go in just a second. Last word from you, Mike. Even though I know you're frustrated with the results of this program, you do have the governor. You've had Bob Duffy saying it, who went from the lieutenant governor's office to the business community here in Rochester. You've got Leslie saying it with Startup New York. Do you at least feel like there is more attention on improving the business climate for NFIB, for your various members? Do you think it's better than it has been in a long time?
I think that small business broadly has been more on the loser side of the picking of winners and losers. And ultimately, economic development programs and investment are necessary. Every state has a program. I think ours is upwards of almost, in total, $8 billion. If you had a sensibly fair, equitable tax code in this state, if you had a sensible, fair, regulated environment in New York State, you'd have economic activity happening organically, you'd be able to sustain and expand existing small business, and you would be able to attract new economic activity. And I think that that is our goal, and that is where our criticism largely lies with startup, because it fits in the mold of Hollywood film and tax credits, tax breaks for yachts and private planes, Startup New York. I think that our members are just extremely frustrated with that, and we would rather see a more organic climate like other states do have.
Mike, thanks for taking the time to join the program today.
All right, thank you.
Mike Durant, State Director for the National Federation of Independent Businesses. Let me grab a quick phone call here, and this is John in Rochester who wanted to weigh in. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Evan. I'm in favor of any program. Something is better than nothing. But the whole point of this, economic failures, both federally and in New York State, is based upon the fact that government cannot pick winners and losers. It's got to be, as Mike had said, it's got to be organic. It's got to go to natural forces. I think supply, and Kent could probably comment on this, supply-side economics. I thought Reagan was outstanding in turning the economy around in a couple-year period using supply-side economics with Milton Friedman and Art Laffer. And that's when real economic vitality occurs, when the market is at its best. So New York has got to do things like become a right-to-work state. As an example, look what happened to Indiana. Indiana became a right-to-work state within the last couple of years. Michigan immediately reacted to that and became a semi-right-to-work state because they reacted to what Indiana was doing. Indiana was attracting Michigan businesses. So the keys right now is reduce regulation, reduce the right-to-work laws in these public unions, and create that business atmosphere through tax cuts and regulatory reforms, and decreases. That's where you're really going to get the effect. What these programs are doing, it's like a pimple on the back of an elephant. It's not going to solve the problem.
Okay, John, thanks for the call. I want to let not only Kent Gardner, the chief economist for the Center for Governmental Research, but Leslie Watley, is executive vice president of Startup New York, respond to some of that. Kent, he's talking history first. He's going all the way back to the Reagan administration, saying there are lessons on the supply side of things there.
Well, his general point, and you mentioned it before, and Mike has certainly mentioned it, the broad scale tax reduction is a desirable thing. And I think when you're New York State and you do have some of the highest taxes, combined personal income tax in particular, our corporation taxes are more in the middle, but our personal income tax is really quite high, which is one of the things that makes startup unique, incidentally, is to cut personal income taxes in one of these programs is very unusual. And I think it reflects an understanding on the part of the administration that's one of New York's problems, is that the PIT is as high as it is. And that if you really do want to stimulate broad economic recovery, that I think in this context, getting our tax rates down more towards the middle rather than towards the top would probably be preferable. The difficulty, of course, is that that's very expensive, a whole lot more expensive than Startup New York. So this is a way that the governor can make a statement about New York State and put a program on the table at a lower cost. I mean, broad tax reduction across the board for personal income tax is a really expensive proposition.
Leslie Watley?
A couple things. One, I am from Detroit, and I worked at General Motors for 16 years, and so I know what that was like there, and I think his statement about things spinning on a dime when they introduced right to work were a little broad, and it didn't spin on a dime, and I think we've all seen what's happened in Michigan. But let's go back to the small business thing for a moment, okay? Our schools are historically graduated an awful lot of really smart kids that wanted to start companies, and where did they go? They went out to Silicon Valley, they went to Raleigh-Durham, they went to Massachusetts. We're trying to keep them here. We graduate over 40,000 STEM grads a year. And we want to keep them here. We want them to start their companies here, stay here. So we've instituted an incubator system. We have state-certified incubators and hotspots that we are trying to help these companies start up. And then the concept is to create an ecosystem so that when they graduate from the incubator, they can go into startup, still have some tax benefits until they get fully secure on their feet financially, but more importantly, they stay. That's helping small business grow and prosper in New York State.
And Greg, Greg Westbrook's here from Clear Cove and wanted to weigh in on that comment as well. Go ahead, Greg.
Thanks, Evan. From my view, I just came from California. I came back in 2012 after being 7 years as a president of Flextronics, one of their larger divisions of Flextronics. And so I lived in the Valley for those 7 years. And my view is exactly what Leslie just said. I want to add another element to it. Without RIT, without NYSERDA, without Startup New York, Clear Cove would have been on a different path. I'm not saying they wouldn't have been in New York State, but that we've been on a different path than what we are. Remember, knowledge comes from universities. That's what's very unique about the Startup New York program. It allows there to be a relationship between the university and the people that choose to commercialize certain product lines that come out of the intellectual property developed at a university, whether it's U of R, University of Albany, RPI, or RIT. They're all great universities, and leveraging that for the strength of New York overall is unmatched, from my view, through Startup New York.
I hear the conservative, especially the conservative listeners in the audience, hear that, and they may applaud job creation, Greg, but they may also hear that without these programs, you'd be on a different path. You might not be here. And some people say we need to get to an economic climate where companies and the market can allow sort of an organic creation of success as opposed to always needing a hand to pull forward. And I don't mean to overgeneralize, and I'm certainly not criticizing Clear Cove, but what would you say to that?
I would take a different view, obviously. For me, it's about innovation, driving innovation in New York State and having it stay in New York State. Both the founder and myself are graduates of RIT 30-plus years ago. But we chose to come back here to help New York State get where it needs to be. But we did it with full eyes wide open, and the assistance we've received, while significant in some people's eyes, is a nice perk, but it's not a driver for our behavior. And that's why I said we've been on a different path. We've been on a slower path. We'd still be in New York, just a slower path. And to leverage our technology out to the marketplace for the renewable market, which renewable fuel market we're choosing to serve, is going to be a huge thing for the state of New York, nationally and globally.
Kent Gardner?
Just one correction. It's a misunderstanding that most of our job creation is in new and small businesses. It's just not true. Most of the jobs that are being created in established mid-sized businesses. It's not new and small. That doesn't mean that new and small isn't important. It isn't. Doesn't mean that we shouldn't be investing in innovation. But let's just, you know, I just want to set the record straight there that established businesses businesses that are modest size and larger are where their jobs are.
I'm way late for a very short break, and then we're going to finish the hour with more of a conversation on Startup New York, what it is, where it's going. Leslie Watley is with us this hour. She's the Executive Vice President of Startup New York. Greg Westbrook is the CEO of Clear Cove. That is a local company that works in, I keep saying, transforming the wastewater industry, new technologies. And Greg is kind of nodding me saying, that's good enough.
Good enough. Renewable energy company.
Renewable energy company that employs 8 people, but through Startup New York plans to expand that to 15 over the next 5 years. And Kent Gardner from the Center for Governmental Research. We're going to hear from, my understanding is we're going to hear from the Working Families Party as well when we come back, who have also wanted to weigh in with some of their thoughts on the program. So let's get that short break and more of your comments on Startup New York next. Coming up in our second hour, we're joined by former American Idol judge Cara DioGuardi, the great songwriter who has published music that has sold millions of copies, music for Christina Aguilera, for Pink, Carrie Underwood, and many other big stars. She's in Rochester talking about songwriting today, and she's in studio with Connections, Cara DioGuardi, next hour.
In the 1960s and early 70s, Cambodia had a thriving pop music scene. It was nearly wiped out in a purge ordered by the Khmer Rouge. A new documentary tells that story.
I was told by many people, you won't find anything. But a lot of the music was out there, and it's because people hid it.
Cambodia's musical legacy later on All Things Considered.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. I think we have to ask Greg Westbrook, the CEO of Clear Cove, what it is they do. I think when we talk about what Startup New York is and the way they're trying to leverage not simply job growth and tax breaks to companies that want to grow, but sort of these intellectual locations and campuses, college campuses, et cetera. Greg, tell our listening audience what it is you do. We hear wastewater.
Yeah,
but
so what do you do? Just think of wastewater as two buckets. The first bucket is primary treatment. The second bucket is secondary treatment. Very hard to understand. What we do, instead of the traditional process where most of that waste is processed in the secondary process, we take that organic matter out early. Human waste.
Okay.
In the front end of the process. We then put it through another patented process of ours and put that fuel into a digester. We have validated this data through NYSERDA, independent validation by a third party, where we produce up to 500% more biogas from the activity associated with taking those organics out early versus them sending on to the secondary side for further processing and actually further electric consumption by the blower motors associated with that process. So it's a truly innovative, 20 patents, local folks all involved in it, whether it's our attorneys, again, back to that whole story, but it's a demonstrative feature set that we're bringing to the marketplace, and we actually have our first orders for it to go into a location in New York State in 2015.
Greg, if you don't meet your job targets for Startup New York, what do you expect to happen?
I expect to be have those benefits removed, okay? I actually have a different question for Leslie. When we exceed them, what additional benefits are we going to get?
Well, I would tell you, if you were conservative, in order to make sure you get those benefits, you should modify your application and up the number of jobs you're protecting so we get them all covered on the income tax.
If you're just joining us, we're talking Startup New York, and some of the criticism in the last week, the governor's office saying is premature. It's a program that rolled out in January of 2014, so it's just over a year old, with the goal of growing existing companies and helping some startups as well. The program offers various benefits to companies just like Greg's, Clear Cove here in the Rochester area. And so again, the criticism last week was looking at first-year numbers, which were small. 76 jobs created across the state, $56,000 in various tax breaks sort of awarded, but those are first-year numbers that are ostensibly going to be exponentially higher over the next 5 years or so. And I want to bring in another organization that has been critical, and that's the Working Families Party. I've got Roger Cook on the line. He's called in from the Western New York chapter with the Working Families Party. Roger, thanks for calling.
Thank you, Evan.
Well, we've heard from Mike Durant from the National Federation of Independent Businesses earlier this hour, and usually NFIB and Working Families Party are not bedfellows. You guys are strange bedfellows on this one, because my understanding is that you have been similarly critical of Startup New York. But Roger, we're hearing this hour that criticism should probably wait. We should wait to evaluate. Why is the Working Families Party criticizing the program?
Yeah, well, we don't think we should wait. The WFP joined with the Conservative Party and the Fiscal Policy Institute and the National Federation of Independent Businesses and Reinvest in Albany and Citizen Action in New York to shut down the program for the time being, put an immediate freeze on adding new businesses to Startup New York, pending a rigorous audit by the comptroller to evaluate the program. We just think it's outrageous that we've created 76 jobs and we've spent something like $679,000 worth of advertising per job. It just seems that this is worthy of an investigation. And secondly, and I think I would ask our economist to weigh in on this, the Working Families Party thinks that we could do better if we were to actually directly invest New York State money in infrastructure projects like rebuilding our roads and bridges, putting construction workers to work, rebuilding our public parks, hiring more teachers, nurses, police, and building the green economy, creating more construction jobs and putting up wind turbines, installing solar and geothermal, rehabbing houses, and so forth. And I think just finally, and again, I'd like to ask our economist to comment on this, it seems like this is a proven method of creating jobs. Under the 2009 American Reinvestment Recovery Act, the Obama administration conservatively estimated that for every $92,000 of government infrastructure spending, we'd create a job for a year. That's over seven times as effective as Startup New York. Or former Fed Vice Chair Alan Blinder estimated it would cost $30,000 to $40,000 per job for the government to directly hire the unemployed. It seems like this gives us a much bigger bang for our
Well, let me ask Kent Gardner, the economist in the room, to respond to some of that. Kent, go ahead.
Sure. I mean, I probably agree in a part, disagree in a part. You know, I think, and that's certainly true of, I think, independent assessments of the ARRA program. The Obama administration's estimates, I think, you know, some people have found them to be inflated. So there are some kinds of infrastructure investments where I would completely agree with you. But I think it is very tempting to see the way out of an economic slump as simply being, you know, taking public sector money and hiring people directly. You know, so you invest in some things that have a very high return on investment, but at the opposite extreme, you end up investing in bridges to nowhere. And, you know, we've certainly seen that happen here. It was a persistent problem in Japan while Japan was trying to pull out of its longstanding slump, that they were investing in things that, yes, did hire people, but whether that was the best use of the funds, I think a lot of people would disagree. So, you know, again, I agree in part and disagree in part.
Leslie Watley, can you weigh in?
Again, I disagree with the math, right? Like, you don't take what's been spent so far and you divide it by the first 76 jobs. Where those companies that are in are projecting to create over 2,800 jobs over 5 years. There's more companies to be announced soon. The program is open for entry to 2020. So we're just starting. We're building a foundation for years to come. So it needs to be evaluated in the future, not right now. And those 76 jobs, those companies only filed for $56,000 worth of tax benefits last year, so I don't think that's anything to complain about. But this is a novel approach. Most people don't understand it, and that's part of where the criticism comes from. And I appreciate opportunities like this where we can talk about it and explain what it's really about, which, as Greg described, is a great alliance between universities,
business, and it's a tax program that the governor has promoted to try to get those businesses to stay here, come here.
Marty writes to the program and says, I still can't get my head around $47 million in advertising. What is the best case scenario? 2,000 jobs, that's something like $10,000. I can't read
my
own
handwriting.
Yeah,
but that's not the right math either.
Okay.
That's year one, okay? We get to do it again this year. We get to do it again next year. We get to do it again the following year. It's open for admission to companies through December 31st, 2020. The companies that get in 2020 still have 10 years to enjoy the program. So we've got a long time in front of us for this program to try to create a lot of jobs. We're aiming for New York to be like Silicon Valley on steroids, right? We're not doing it just one school. Right now we're at 69 schools. I have another 17 schools that are in the approval process and more behind that. We are trying to make New York the logical place for people to come when they want to start or grow a business. And when the kids graduate and they want to start their own company, we want them to stay here. And to Kent's earlier point, it's not just new companies, it's expanding medium and large companies. We want it attractive for them too. And the economic incentives, like them or not, are necessary for states to be competitive. I agree with some of the fundamental issues that people have raised. Again, this program has its mission. It can't cure everything. Maybe there's other programs that are introduced in the future to address other issues.
Yeah. Kent, you did call the $47 million ad budget so far on this head-snapping earlier. And Marty writing in basically saying the same thing here. But has your mind changed as you hear the discussion this hour on this?
Well, I mean, it's still a very large number, and I know that a substantial share of that also has been spent inside the state. Advertising's expensive. It's so, you know, given I don't know what has been spent historically, but we do have, I mean, New York State does live in a very competitive environment when it comes to industrial recruitment. It's not a myth that we have other firms, other states looking to attract New York State businesses to go to North Carolina, to Texas, to Florida, these other states. It you know, that really does happen, and so we have it is a problem, and I think that the state has to respond. I don't know about whether the number is whether that's a necessary number, whether the number has been spent prudently or not. I'm just not in that business.
Okay, and Roger Cook from the Working Families Party. Kent is saying you got to grapple with the fact that this does happen, that there are competitive states that they are incentivizing movement, that we are constantly seeing people like Greg Westbrook and Clear Cove being wooed to other places, and this is part of the game. Do you accept that?
I really don't. I think that you can have a race to the bottom, and many states have done that. I think that, again, it just makes a lot more sense to invest directly in programs that we need. When FDR did it during the Works Progress Administration, we employed 3.3 million Americans, building and fixing roads and bridges, parks, and community schools. I think demand side is a very valid way to do economic development. And when Comptroller DiNapoli looked at the track record last year of the Empire State Economic Development Jobs Program, again, we don't have a great track record here. We found that basically 2,424 jobs were created, and that came to a cost of $536,000 per job. It just doesn't seem like a good use to me of our tax dollars. And then when you give these tax subsidies to these companies, either we lose revenue, and so we lose services, or we have to go to the little taxpayer and make up the difference. So I just don't see the gain here. I really don't. You spend $1.3 billion. Economic Development Corporation spent $1.3 billion and created 2,424 jobs last year. And then you look at the film industry revelation last week, and they get $900,000. They contributed $900,000 to Governor Cuomo. They got $420 million per year tax credits. It just doesn't seem like, to me, good economic development.
Well, let me get one more listener comment in, and then we'll get some closing comments. Tim writes, I will applaud this program for now. We should trust but verify. We get a lot of Reaganisms this hour. Trust but verify, Tim says. This state has not had a good history of policing companies that have not delivered on promises. 5 years from now, they better be whacking anyone who doesn't deliver. Leslie from Startup New York, what do you think of that comment?
You look, we've been trying very hard to be transparent on this program. We've got everything on the website. Every campus application is there. We put this report out, and we put that 76 number right out there, knowing we were opening ourselves up for criticism. I agree. We have to make sure that the jobs that have been projected are met.
Leslie Watley has taken an hour for us here, and I greatly appreciate it. I think our listeners do as well. Thank you very much for taking the time, and let's continue the conversation as Startup New York grows, Leslie.
My pleasure. And by the way, you guys should be proud of yourselves. Of the 93 companies that have been announced so far, 9 are from the Finger Lakes, and we put the next announcement out, your number jumps. So you guys are doing a great job up there.
Well, thank you very much. It's Leslie Watley joining us, the Executive Vice President of Startup New York. Kent Gardner, last word on Trust But Verify. Tim's comment about making sure we police this. Don't let companies overpromise, and it's happened in the past.
Yeah, that certainly is true. I'm also concerned, too, that the program will change over time, and that people will take a look at these numbers and say, well, gee, let's loosen the application restrictions. Let's make it easier for people to apply for these programs. And we talk about there being a logical connection to the work of the university. Well, that's a term of art, and I'm sure that there are some regulations governing what that might look like, but, I can see that loosening up over time. I mean, that was part of the problem. There's a kind of a scope creep issue with Empire Zones, and we wouldn't want to see that happen here.
All right. Well, Kent, from the Center for Governmental Research, always nice to get your perspective. Thank you.
Thank you, Evan.
And Greg Westbrook from Clear Cove, your industry is certainly a fascinating one as we go forward, and I'd love to have you back on this program just talking more about what you do and many other sort of similar enterprises do. So let's have that conversation.
We'd love to have the opportunity. Thanks, Evan, for
Clear
your time.
Cove, are you online, Clear Cove?
Of course.
tell us where you are. I'd love to look up more.
ClearCoveSystems.com.
ClearCoveSystems.com. He's such an honorable guy, he didn't want to overpromote. Greg Westbrook from Clear Cove, a new company here in our area. Thanks for listening. Short break and shifting gears big time next hour. We're going to relax a little bit here on Connections.